The early 2000s were a golden age for English rugby, culminating in England's most dramatic of victories in the 2003 World Cup final. The domestic game was thriving too, with Wasps emerging as one of the major forces under the leadership of Warren Gatland and the captaincy of Lawrence Dallaglio. One of the National League's founder members, Wasps have been devastated by administration and relegation in 2022. But in the era of Gatland and Dallaglio, they were dominant. In this latest episode of our Rugby Stories podcast series, we hear how Wasps grew from nomadic also-rans to the champions of the English and European game.
And this is it. No margin for error now.
You hear the crowd baying for blood. This is going to be murder on the pitch.
I don't think I've seen a Highland Cup game as good as that in the last 19 years. I could watch it every day.
And Robert Howley may have just won the European Cup.
There was about 28 sightings after the game, which I think is probably a European record for any fixture.
Oh, this is a serious injury.
How these guys picked themselves up, to this day, I don't know. I mean, it was like two buses hitting each other.
Trevilyosha!
Sport is about emotion, right? And there's only ever two emotions, is agony or ecstasy. It just happened that we were ahead when the music stopped.
In Rugby Stories, you'll get the full, extended, uncut anecdotes from the players, coaches and key figures, some never told before. The history of Wasps is just littered with some of the greatest names in the sport, but there is one name that stands above all the rest. His blood, his sweat and, of course, those famous in-the-tunnel tears. It is, of course, Lawrence Dallaglio. He loved Wasps, wore his heart on his sleeve, his chest, his boots. In fact, he was all heart and was described by Lions Supremo Warren Gatland as the best captain he's ever had. The number eight spent 18 years with Wasps, 326 games of inspiring and winning. So how did Wasps' greatest ever player end up signing for the club?
Well, quite honestly, I joined Wasps for a number of reasons, really. One, I opened the newspaper and I looked at the Courage League table and Wasps were top of the table. It was 1989-1990 season. Rob Andrew was their kind of highest profile player, Jeff Probyn. And I thought, well, I may as well start at the top. I had no idea where Wasps was. Thankfully, it was in London. I got on the tube to Sudbury Town. I got off the tube. I asked six people where Wasps' training ground was. No one knew. Eventually, I turned up and I was quite surprised, quite shocked, really, because it was a it was like walking into a working man's club. Literally, kind of very modest, very humble sort of situation, you know, environment. They only had two rugby pitches. One had clearly been bombed during the war, and the other one wasn't in great shape. You know, and I'd come from a school that had 28 rugby pitches, so I was a little bit shocked that this team were top of the league. But they actually won the league in the year that I joined in 1990. Rob Andrew and co. The early years of amateur rugby, certainly in my lifetime, were dominated by Bath. Wasps and Leicester were the kind of the challengers, really. Leicester would then become the preeminent team in English rugby under Martin Johnson, and then Wasps kind of took that mantle from Leicester for about 3 or 4 years as well. So winning was in Wasps' DNA, but equally they were sort of a team that would get to finals and then ultimately get beaten by Bath most of the time. Wasps is quite a unique environment. What people have to realise about Wasps Rugby Club, it's not a place. It's always been and always has been about the people. You've got Northampton, you've got Bath, you've got Newcastle, you know, you've got Gloucester. These are all places, you know, they're cities that live and breathe rugby. You know, Wasps is not a city, it's not a place. So it's always been about the people that come and go. And that has always been very true to its DNA, really. We've had numerous training grounds, we've had numerous playing stadiums. It's always been a little bit nomadic. It's now found its home in Coventry, which is fantastic. We won the first ever professional league title in 1996-97.
Kenny Logan scoots in, and that's the championship winning try. That seals it for Wasps for certain. That's the title for Wasps.
There was a ambition and a real desire to bring trophies to the club. We had a wonderful academy system that kept all its players. And I think history shows that if you can keep a playing group together and keep them playing together over a period of time, eventually success will come.
Although Wasps were clearly a team on the rise, they still needed someone at the top to bring it all together. Into the club came Warren Gatland. He had helped to turn around the fortunes of the Irish national side, but it was at Wasps where Gatland would begin to cement his status as one of the game's greatest coaches. Lawrence Dallaglio credits the foresight of outgoing director of rugby, Nigel Melville, in setting up a coaching team that would shape Wasps into a winning machine.
Nigel Melville was quite instrumental in bringing Warren Gatland to the club. He knew that he was leaving to go on to, as it turned out, to coach Gloucester. In true Wasps fashion, he wanted to leave the club in a better shape than when he arrived. And he'd already brought in Sean Edwards, which many people saw as a bit of a risk, having never coached rugby union. But, you know, Sean was a fantastic addition. And then his final act, really, as Wasps director of rugby, Nigel Melville, was to bring in Warren Gatland. And what he did is he brought in Warren Gatland, but he brought him in 7 months earlier than he was actually needed. So Warren had the opportunity to really look at Wasps without coaching them, to look at the setup, what needed to be done, what players needed to be brought in, what improvements needed to be made. And that was a kind of watching brief, really, for Warren. And clearly, for us to bring in a coach of international experience, he'd already coached Ireland, was a huge plus for us. And obviously, it was to be the start of the most successful era in Wasps history. And he saw a squad of players that had finished seventh in the league the year before and looked at that squad of players and thought, this team should be much better than this. They are much better than this. And therefore, he's quite shrewd in terms of the selection that he made. He clearly left Ireland with a point to prove. Wasps was a good place to do that. His impact was almost immediate.
Tom Voyce was just 22 when he made the decision to leave rivals, arch rivals, Bath, and move to London to join Gatland's Wasps revolution. He came from good rugby stock. His great uncle Anthony Thomas Voyce was a double Grand Slam winner with England and would later become president of the RFU. Voyce was on the fringes of the England squad, but when teammates like Dallaglio and Josh Lucy went to Australia for the World Cup, it was a really good opportunity for the wing to take centre stage.
Wasps as a club to me was hugely important. It basically gave me a new kind of lease in life in my rugby career. I was in Bath, there was a change of management and they didn't think I was big enough, so I moved on. Gats gave me the opportunity. Didn't see a ball for 4 months. Just sat in the weights room and trying to build myself up. But for me, it was like an orphanage, which might be a weird one to explain, but it was just many walks of life, you know, different colours, different origins, different religions, but it was just a unity. Like, we always had a backstory, something that gave us that little bit of edge. And Gats, Lowe, and the other senior guys were able to kind of collate that and fuel that emotion into games. And it was a family. It was a family that never had a home. Wasps was known as kind of the nomads a little bit, but I think that just gave us an extra edge and an extra focus and wanting to achieve what we got to achieve over a very long period of time.
Rob Howley was 31 when the opportunity came to move to English rugby. The Wales and Lions scrum half had spent his entire club career with Bridgend and Cardiff, but he would finish it, in some style that is, at Wasps. Howley was close to joining one of Wasps' greatest rivals when a chance meeting led to what would result in a life-changing move.
Well, it was towards the end of 2002, March, April. I'd spoken to Bath, believe it or not. I'd just been to Bath for medical. It was my last international game that year and we played against Scotland. And I sat back to back, really, in the function after with Kenny Logan. And Kenny Logan had asked me back in sort of the March time what we're doing next year, because he knew it was my last international game. And he said, well, when you come to Wasps? And I hadn't really thought about, you know, Wasps. I'd been in talks with Bath. I'd been to the medical with Bath and I was awaiting then the results. And then as I arrived home, coming through the door about half an hour, I had a phone call off Warren Gatland. Never spoken to Warren before. He asked me, you know, what I was doing next year and, you know, they'd be interested in me signing. So I'd looked at the Wasps team sheet and their squad, and we'd been on a Barbarian tour with the UK over to Ireland. Kenny Logan, Lawrence was on it, Simon Shaw. And I knew a lot of the players who I played either against or with the Barbarians or against with England. I just thought, yeah, right, I'll take that option. And I never looked back, really. I had fantastic 2 years.
An enigmatic, mysterious figure in the Wasps' backroom team was the defence and backs coach Sean Edwards. He still is both of those, that's for sure. A Rugby League Hall of Famer, one of the greatest players of all time. After switching coaching codes, he'd go on to have a successful career at both club and international level with Wales and France. For voice, he brought a fear factor to the dressing room, even for some of the side's biggest names.
Sean, like, he was a terrier. Like, I think I made a comment in the weights room once that, like, Sean's just like an animal. And I was actually quite scared that one of the boys told him and thought I was going to get my head ripped off. But Sean was even in, like, the weights room with a punch bag and just smashing the hell out of it. And, you know, that kind of competitive edge that he had and that determination to win and want to get the best out of players was phenomenal. And the good thing is, when I turned up, I was slightly scared of him. And I'm not normally scared of people, but I was scared because I didn't know really how to take him. He had this kind of blanket expression and it was very black and white. You get on, you do it, and you perform to that level. And if you don't, you're out. And he just brought that winning experience from his Wigan days, you know, his Great Britain days, and just a different look at the game, obviously, with that blitz defence he brought. So Warren brought a steely edge, that kind of Kiwi mentality. But I thought for me personally, he was a tremendous businessman. The reason I say that is because he just knew how to manage people. He didn't necessarily lead from the front, but he encouraged those to lead. And it didn't matter if you were the janitor or, you know, low captain of the side, you were kind of all had a voice, all had an opportunity to push each other on and pull each other up.
Success in any team is coach-led, but it's kind of player-driven. You need to create this kind of alchemy, this kind of magic between the coaching group and the playing group. And certainly with Sean Edwards as Warren's kind of number two and his assistant, he was equally as much a part of that as anyone. We had a guy called Craig White who was very instrumental in transforming the fitness and the conditioning side, probably introduced something to professional rugby that no club side had ever seen before. I know everyone says this, but without doubt, we were the fittest side in that professional era. And it showed, really, because we were able to win games right up to the final whistle, up to the last minute. We grew into those games. We got stronger as the games went on. So I think there was this kind of chemistry between the coaching group and the playing group as well.
Sean Edwards introduced the blitz defence to the sport, an often terrifying technique when the entire defence moves forward as one, a marauding line of teak-tough tacklers smothering and squashing the opposition attack as the ball leaves the base of a maul or a ruck. Edwards and Wasps perfected it, as Tom Voice remembers.
Layman's terms would be just bring them hell, but I suppose blitz defence was run as hard as you could in one direction and smash the hell out of the opposition.
What Sean wanted to do was have this kind of new, very aggressive, very confrontational style of defending where you cut the ball off at source, you're able to put in some really big hits, you're able to tackle players front on, and it didn't always work. That's the point. But in the big games, when everything was on the line, I think the blitz defence more often than not got us over the line and produced some, you know, some wonderful rugby. When you're winning, you know, sport is very fun. Rugby is very fun. But yes, it was infectious. You know, it was that you really felt energised the team and actually became a hallmark of the way that Wasps played. And the think time for the opponent was diminished. And I think that was the key. You almost starve your opponent of oxygen because they haven't got the time to think about what they're going to do. And a lot of people, when they're faced with something running at them, they panic.
Within a year of taking over from Nigel Melville, Warren Gatland led them to a Premiership final and then success in Europe in the Parker Penn Challenge Cup.
The Parker Penn champions, now the Zurich Premiership champions, Wasps have completely ripped Gloucester to bits. Look at this, black and gold pandemonium. Lawrence Dallaglio and his club, champions of England.
As you would do a big celebration that night in locally in Richmond. And then the next day, that was it for Wasps. I knew that very much our focus, my focus, and for the rest of the squad was on England. I had a couple of weeks of holiday and then straight into international camp. And a week later, I was playing against the All Blacks in Wellington. It was relentless, if I'm honest with you, but you'd rather go into that game off the back of winning a Premiership title. Every time you lace your boots, you know, good things happen. And therefore, you want that feeling to carry on and continue. And that's certainly the feeling I had in 2003. I wouldn't say you felt invincible, because you never do in a game of rugby, but you felt strong and confident that you could really make an impression. We had the most grueling international camp down at Pennyhill Park. We went over to France. We definitely arrived in Perth, the fittest side in the world, the best prepared side in the world. And with a genuine belief, we were the number one side in the world, and with a genuine belief that we could win the World Cup.
England did go on to win the World Cup in Australia, and Dallaglio returned to Wasps bruised but buoyant.
What was good from a Wasps perspective is that, you know, Warren Gatland had coached in Ireland, he'd coached in England. He had a real respect for the rugby player, the Northern Hemisphere rugby player, which a lot of his fellow Kiwis and Aussies perhaps lacked. He really believed in us and said, look, go and win the World Cup. You know, he said, I honestly think you guys are good enough to do that. As your coach, as your club coach, I want to be proud of the fact that you guys are going to win the World Cup. So there wasn't a them and us situation with Warren Gatland, maybe because he'd already coached international rugby himself. So he kind of knew how hard it was. And I remember him phoning me up a couple of days after the World Cup, and obviously I was still high and enjoying it and probably still out. And, you know, he was obviously one that liked a beer himself. So he said to me, look, you know, well done, congratulations, along with all the rest of the Wasps guys. Couldn't be prouder of you. He said, look, have a week off. You probably need it to sober up. He said, I need you to play next week. We've got a big European Cup game against Perpignan at Adams Park at home. And I need you and Josh and Stuart and Simon Shaw and, all, you know, Joe Worsley, and we need you guys back. So I think that was a fair deal. He said, I'll give you a bit more time off later on in the season. And Warren was always good, you know, true to his word like that.
So, the World Cup is won. Celebrations have been had, hangovers nursed, and the England players returned to their clubs. But those shiny medals had to be put away for a while. There was still half a season of the Premiership to play out, and a large trophy to be fought for. So, a test for Gatland. How to reintegrate those winning players into a winning side. For Tom Voyce, this meant he got nervy about his place in the side.
When the World Cup players came back, it was, I mean, being an Englishman, it was great to see, you know, your fellow men come back with a World Cup. And some of them I only briefly met on the rugby pitch. I wasn't actually teammates with them. So it was kind of a weird one for me in that respect. There was a little bit of fear as well for me, because when the World Cup was on, it gave me an opportunity to put my hand up to try and be in that first 15. And there were certain players like Josh and Kenny Logan for Scotland coming back. So there was a fear element that maybe some others hadn't expected when those boys come back, because I put so much in for us, I didn't want to lose my position. But certainly when we were kind of going well, we had a reasonable good start, to have those players come back to bolster your team and squad was a huge inspiration. And I think the key thing for those guys was to come back and slip in and probably not have the arrogance that we just won a World Cup and we can do what we want. It was actually how they slipped in. And again, this is due to Warren's, you know, man management skills, was to make sure that we got the best performance out of them and take that kind of confidence from the World Cup and lead it into our own squad.
Watts, again, was always very good at bringing people back down to earth. And when I started training the following week, it was business as usual. There was always a different buzz in training when it was, you know, Heineken Champions Cup time. You know, it was a change of direction. It was away from the Premiership. Everyone talks about it glowingly, always talks about it being that international rugby, but in a club jersey.
As Premiership champions, Wasps entered the 2003-2004 Heineken Cup with a quiet confidence. It was their sixth appearance in Europe's top tier. They'd done okay with two quarterfinals, and they'd also bagged the European undercard, the Challenge Cup, the previous year. For this odyssey, they were in the same pool as Perpignan, Rugby Calvisano and Celtic Warriors. Wasps began with wins at home to Perpignan and then in Italy. But there was a huge shock in store when Celtic Warriors waltzed into Adams Park and left with a 14-9 win.
So here we go, Wasps, champions of England, continuing their quest to become champions of Europe for the first time. Cute little chip from Wyatt. Havili! Oh, that is something else from the Celtic Warriors.
It hurt, particularly for me and many good friends with the Celtic Warriors. I knew how difficult it was going to be. On a Saturday night, Adams Park was awful conditions, rain, wind, and we just didn't play well. You know, the golden rule in the Heineken Cup, you have to win your home games. You know, after losing, we knew that probably it was backs against the wall in the pool. It put immense pressure on us, really, internally.
You know, we were played off the park. We were outplayed. The weather conditions came, it became very wet, and they played those conditions far better than we did. Kerry Sweeney, who was playing fly half for them, had a really strong game, and they deserved it. The unique thing about the European Cup, and it still happens to this day, you get the opportunity to play the same opponent the following week. And it's very rare that you get to do that, to avenge a defeat straight away.
So then, huge pressure on the return fixture at Brewery Field, as Howley and Co knew only a win would keep their European dream alive.
We played them on a Friday night back at my home club at Brewery Field, which was really strange for me, going back for the first time, for a long time, going back to my home club. Myself, Sean Edwards and Warren Gatlin, we'd gone down to watch them about 2 weeks prior when they played Perpignan. I'd never played. When you look at the experiences of London Wasps in 04, the Celtic Warriors crowd, 11,000, Brewery Field, absolutely jam-packed. They came to see Lawrence play, Joe Worsley play, and it was a fantastic atmosphere that actually brought the best out of us. Thankfully, I think we won 17-12, and our Heineken Cup campaign is back on track.
A win against Rugby Calvisano then set up a trip to Perpignan for the final pool game. Dallaglio knew it was their chance to make a big statement to the rest of Europe.
Certainly in those days, and still to this day, really, winning away is tough. Winning away in France was a real feather in your cap. You know, it's one of those things you have to be able to do. And Perpignan lives and breathes rugby. The atmosphere built and built, almost to the point like it was a cup final itself. And I remember reading the local paper in that part of the world, and the coach was sort of quoted as saying that, you know, this is going to be literally murder on the pitch. There's going to be a bloodbath on the pitch. You know, his words were quite sort of aggressive and left you in no uncertain terms as to how they were going to approach the match, which kind of got you in the right mood, that's for sure. Being in that dressing room just before we ran out, and it was almost like Gladiator, you know what I mean? You could hear the noise outside. You could hear the crowd baying for blood, literally. It was as close as you get to that environment, and I think we certainly got ourselves emotionally absolutely at the right level for that game. I mean, I think we'd got ourselves just to the point where we were virtually all ready to do whatever it took to win the game. I mean, you know, I was crying, Warren Gatland was crying, the fitness coach was crying. If ever we timed our pitch to perfection, it was that game, because we came out absolutely ready for anything, and ready to give anything for the cause. And it was inspiring, you know. We walked into that Lions den, literally, and the noise was incredible. It's probably one of the best games of rugby I've ever played in, really.
And this is it. No margin for error now. The losers will be out of this season's Heineken Cup.
The French are the French. We know when you go to those places like the Toulouses, the Perpignans of this world, it's not going to be an easy game. You're going to have some naughties going on in the background, things that you probably couldn't get away with today. But it was two teams that weren't going to give up on each other. You know, they were out there to prove a point. Very alpha male guys smashing in this kind of Coliseum stadium with everything on the line.
Dallaglio, huge overlap. Worsley, the door's open. Johnny O'Connor straightens, scores. Wasps strike first.
When you're on the side of the wing and you see some of these hits and what those boys are putting in, it's just unreal. And I think for me, I don't think it was a filthy moment in respect to how he got the injury, but I just remember coming in after the full time and seeing Joe Worsley cutting his boot off, and it's basically his boot was holding his foot together because he had this massive gash down the front. But the fact that he carried on playing on just pure adrenaline, where that ruck, where that stamp might have been impeded on his foot, who knows when in the game, but that sheer adrenaline just pushing through, getting the results we want to do, was just very hard men going at each other for 80, 85 minutes, and luckily I was coming out with a result.
Howley to Voice. Tom Voice taking it home.
Alan Lewis, I think, was the referee that day. He's an Irishman, and I thought to him, you know, and I said to him, you know... If you think we've got a tough day today, you know, you've got the toughest day today. You're going to have to be right on your job. And sure enough, you know, he was. I think there was about 28 sightings after the game, which I think is probably a European record for any fixture. Thankfully, 26 were from Perpignan and only a couple from us. I think there may have even been more, but there was a lot going on, and there was a lot for the referee to keep his mind on.
Dallaglio! Oh, the captain's been colossal today.
You know, Lawrence, in the last couple of minutes of the game, he scores the try, which gives us, you know, a home draw in that quarter final. And we didn't know at the time. I think a couple did, but, you know, welcoming Gloucester to Adams Park. And, you know, we certainly had played Gloucester many times, particularly in that Premiership final in 2003.
That 34-6 thrashing set up a home quarterfinal against fellow English side Gloucester. Not just beaten, they were thrashed by Wasps in the previous year's Premiership final at Twickenham. Led by Phil Vickery, Tom Voice knew Gloucester would be out for revenge.
You know, I've been on the receiving end of that, and it is kind of demoralising, but when you come up against a side like that again, they're obviously going to hurt and they're going to remember that. And I just remember that the Gloucester pack were a big, formidable pack. They didn't get to the top of the Premiership for no reason. They had very exciting backs and the likes of Simpson Daniel and the likes, but their forwards were the pack that gave them that rock bed to kind of attack on. And I just remember leading up into that game, a lot of the conversation about the final and them wanting revenge.
Sometimes there's a feeling when it's a European game and you're drawn against a team from your own country that it's sort of a bit of an anti-climax. But there was a bit of beef between the two teams because we'd beaten them in the Premiership final. They felt pretty annoyed by that, the fact that they'd won the title by 15 points but then lost the trophy in the playoff structure. But, you know, led by, superbly by Phil Vickery, they're an iconic club, Gloucester, and we were very comfortable in the knowledge that we were playing them at home. We'd just been to Perpignan, so we kind of knew we had what it took to win.
To the match, and a shocking collision in the first half with Delalio and teammate Paul Volley could and should have ended their involvement.
I collided heads with Paul Volley and was unconscious for a little while.
Oh, this is a serious injury.
Phil Vickery, I noticed afterwards, went and looked at Paul Volley, took his gum shield out, just looked at me and walked past me on the side of the pavement. But it was, at that point, the game was 0-0. And obviously, you know, we had a bit of a fight on our hands just to stay on the pitch.
I think everyone sees on the TV when that ball goes up and we were started the kickoff, and suddenly that huge collision between Vols and Lowell is just like, they're both on the floor. Now, obviously, today's game would not allow what carried on, but you got probably the hardest man in Paul Volley on the pitch and then your leader on the pitch, both lying down. You know, you do have a bit of a panic station because you've built up that emotion, you've built a lot of that focus on these players to go out and perform and hopefully get us a win, and then you see them down. So it was a worry. I reckon it was a worry throughout the whole squad, you know, not only just on the pitch, but off the pitch. And how those guys pick themselves up to this day, I don't know.
Oh, Paul Volley is not good. Surely he has to go off.
I think it must have been a 2 or 3 minute break. And thankfully then it was like two of the Wasps icons getting back up and coming back into the war, really. And thankfully, you know, I think in today's game, I think they'd be off for a bit of concussion.
In those days, if you weren't removed from the field of play, then you carry on playing. And I'm not saying it was right. It wasn't right to do that. But, you know, if it's within the laws, then that's what you do. And I said to the doctor, I'm not leaving the field because, look, I'm fine. I'm okay. And I knew that if I'd left the field, I wasn't allowed to be back on again. There wasn't this kind of HIA or 10-minute concussion kind of, you know, protocol or anything like that. So and the same with Paul Volley as well. And to lose one back row player at that time would have been a problem. To lose two at the same time would have been critical. So it was important that we stayed on, even if it was for 10 or 15, 20 minutes.
What this game asks of these men.
I've been sparked out in the past and you think, you know, you've been dazed, but those boys properly, I mean, it was probably like two buses hitting each other and, you know, full-on car crash. And the fact they've got up and carried on playing, but also being able to make the right decisions and not affecting their other team members around them.
I was lucky enough to score a try just before half-time. And I do remember going down the tunnel and not, you know, sitting down at half-time and I didn't know where I was, didn't know what the score was. I didn't even know I'd scored. So that's probably not a good indication that I should have been on the field of play, really.
Nearly there! Nearly there! Given, and Wasps hauling themselves towards the Heineken Cup semi-final.
It was as emphatic as it gets, really, for a European quarter-final. I think we then knew that we had a real crack at this. You know, we had a real shot of winning this title. You know, we'd been to Perpignan and we'd won comfortably, demolished Gloucester in the quarter final. We'd probably take anyone in the semi final.
An impressive 34-3 win over Gloucester, and Wasps were into their first Heineken Cup semi final. The opponents were Munster, and a daunting trip to Lansdowne Road. Tom Voyce and Lawrence Dallaglio remember the build-up was all about Warren Gatland returning to the country where he'd been sacked as national team head coach 3 years earlier.
The Gatland factor going into this was huge, obviously. It's probably the game out of all the games, including the final, which I remember the most, and it still vividly sticks in my mind.
Warren was very quiet about it, never mentioned it at all, but I knew deep down personally that there was an itch that needed scratching there, that he felt that the circumstances around his exit from the Irish national team were not for the right reasons, and it left a bad taste in his mouth. And so I used it internally as a way of motivating, even though I wouldn't necessarily have said that to Warren directly, but I made sure that in training throughout the week that the players very much knew that this was, you know, if you ever needed any added motivation for a semi-final, you know, Warren had given us all the opportunity to do some pretty special things on the rugby field, and this was one that we needed to give back to him, really.
Going into that game, I've never seen it or experienced before. We got on the bus, and that short bus journey down to Lansdowne Road, there was smashing the bus from the Irish fans, spitting, whatever. You know, it was proper animalistic behaviour. The English are in town, you know, get out of our city. And he was true to his word. It was unbelievable kind of scenes to see walking into that old Lansdowne Stadium and seeing that kind of mongrelness coming through and thinking, right, we're up against it massively. And then when you walk out and see that stadium and it's just a sea of red with 3,000 black kind of spotted fans in the corner, you know, you knew that this was going to be a gladiatorial fight of all fights, really.
There was, however, a big family issue in the build-up to the match for one of Wasps' key players, Trevor Liotta. But Tom Voyce thinks that their teammates' troubles only helped to strengthen the bond in the team.
Trevor was a massive family man. He had amazing children. He'd bring them to the training pitch and, you know, they'd play with you and stuff. And the one thing that mattered to him was his kids. And so sadly, Trevor learned that his, I think, wife or girlfriend at the time took his kids back to New Zealand that following week. Now, for me, if I lost my kid that week, you know, how can you concentrate on a game like that? But for us, we were in that change room, and I remember Lowell, we all sat around and we were in the huddle, and he just said,
you know, we're your family now, and trying to find the right emotional hook. And I think, you know, every player in the team could relate to that, because it's not about the rugby player, it's about the people. And, you know, we all felt that going onto the field. So I think it created this real togetherness, this real kind of unity.
And, you know, brought him to tears, had a bit of a tear in my eye. And it was just like, if we could give anything back to someone, this is the guy we could give back, and we have to give that back in our performance. And, yeah, it was, again, another hugely emotional change room, but with a point, defy all the odds and put a win on the board to put smiles on faces.
It wasn't only Liotta who was playing through personal challenges. Rob Howley was hoping his father would see him get to a European final.
That year, my father had been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and, you know, the long-term scenarios weren't great. And going over to Munster, being part of the semi-final, I knew my parents were going to come over and watch. My parents never watched too often, but they'd watched the Gloucester game. And obviously they were over in Dublin and watching the semi-final. And the game itself was personally, and I think, you know, many players who played in that game, and I include Munster players, it's the best ever game that I've been a part of.
How special does this feel? Lansdowne Road, sold out, and a test match in all but name. A moment of truth for the English champions against the might of Munster, an island.
I've never seen anything like it. I mean, we walked out with Munster team, Jim Williams and myself, and the teams behind us, and it was just a sea of red everywhere. I mean, the entire stadium was just like a complete bowl of red shirts. I mean, I couldn't see one black shirt at all. And the noise and the atmosphere and the energy. And it, again, the sun, it was a red hot day too. It was probably the best atmosphere I've ever walked out in front of. It was a game that you just want to be part of those occasions. The game itself was incredible. I mean, it's obviously referred to as one of the all-time great games of European rugby, and there's a reason for that, because obviously what was at stake. You've got two iconic teams in Munster and Wasps, both domestic champions, both going at each other for a place in the final. The lead changed hands countless times. I mean, it had yellow cards on both sides. It had some wonderful tries.
And King, oh, that's a beauty. Abbott to Lucy, who clatters over.
Munster were leading by 10 points with only 15 minutes left. The game was in danger of slipping away from Wasps.
Just feel like Lansdowne Road is alive. Christian Cullen over the top, picked up by Stephen Keogh. Keogh on the charge, volley gets back. Oh, it surely went forward. It's picked up by Foley and it's given.
Wasps were ahead, then Munster would come back, then Wasps were ahead, then Munster would come back. And in the end, Munster, I think, were 12 points up with 10 minutes to go. And I remember being under the post and we got everyone together and we just said, look, we've got what it takes to win this game. And luckily, there was still a clock in the stadium, so I looked up.
Thanks to a technological error, what Delalio and his teammates saw on the stadium clock was the wrong time. Tom Voyce thought he had less than 6 minutes to save the game, so he went for broke.
As a winger, you never go off the cliff. I think they were a man down and we were going from right to left in the second half, and I got the ball out wide to me and I had Jared Payne. So, and simply because I was taking in the fact that there was what I believe 5 or 6 minutes left in the game, I decided to take the outside.
Voice on rocket fuel!
Now, unbeknownst to me, what was on the actual TV clock, which was the correct timings, it was something like 69. And there's not a hope in hell I would have taken the outside. But I managed to get on the outside, and then I had Cullen in front of me, a hero to surpass, and managed to sidestep him.
Still Wasps, and this is Voice!
Tom Voice scored the try that's kind of got us back into the game, brought us level. You know, last couple of minutes, we caught the kickoff, went straight from the kickoff, went the length of the field. And again, it was that willingness to really attack. I mean, a lot of sides would have kind of played out for extra time, maybe kicked the ball off the pitch, but we had no other thought in our head but going out there to win the game in normal time.
And in the 86th minute, Wasps would get the chance to win it. And of all the people, it would be Trevor Liotta.
We played attacking, adventurous rugby, and you know, particularly going into the last couple of minutes of the game, obviously they were down a yellow card, and it was our ability to keep hold of possession. I think Kingy in the end acts as a scrum half and pops it to Trevor.
Alex King, Trevor Liotta!
Oh! I think he's gone to the TMO.
Is he in control of the ball?
The ruling, he was in control, and Wasps had won a classic, 37 points to 32.
And Wasps into the final.
Thankfully, you know, Trevor with his big frame gets the pressure down, and it was a truly magnificent game to be involved in. I could watch it every day.
Trev getting that try, I know a lot of those Munster boys will still say that it wasn't a try to this day, but for me it was just an epic build-up, and it couldn't have happened to a better guy that day. It was kind of like the final kind of swan song of that whole day in respect to the emotion he went through, and what he got paid back for was kind of hard work and dedication.
He was an iconic player, if I'm honest, and he became a cult hero at Wasps for very good reasons. You know, when he was on his game, there's no hooker in the world like him.
That performance, like I said, was not just only for kind of Trev and for him, but also for Gats, definitely, and giving him that vindication of showing that he is a world-class coach, which he is today. And you know, he can turn a group of players around. I think that was an important step in his journey as being a coach as well.
It was the biggest win of our careers in a club jersey, really. I think there was just this feeling clearly we were obviously smiles, happy, excited. There's only ever two, you know, sport is about emotion, right? And there's only ever two emotions, is agony or ecstasy. You know, we don't do that drawing stuff. We were elated. It was just smiles all over, but also just to have been part of such an incredible game of rugby. You know, you kind of knew then that that even then, that game, you know, even though we're biased, obviously, a little bit, that game had everything. I mean, and it just happened that we were ahead when the music stopped. You know, that's what it felt like. You know, it felt a privilege to be part of it. When the music stopped, Wasps were ahead by a nose, really. And we might have over-celebrated a little bit as well. Success in the team, certainly, that we've all been involved in, is the fun is a big part of that, is also a key driver. You have to mark those moments. I was a firm believer in that myself. You know, because you never know what happens in life. You know, it could be your last game. You could play for another 20 years. Who knows? But you need to mark those moments and remember them. We certainly did that. We had a small but very passionate group of fans that stayed with us for most of the night as well. And I think Warren Gatland might have just had a quiet sort of smirk and grin of satisfaction.
And so, the date with destiny. Laurence Dallaglio's men would face the mighty Toulouse in the final on English soil.
If you could pick one team to play in a European Cup final, you'd pick Toulouse. They are the team, you know, the Galacticos. They won the first ever European Cup when it first started. They've obviously gone on to win many, many more. They are household names, you know, packed full of international players. Their salary roster was probably three or four, five times what it was at Wasps. But, you know, as I said, it was like playing Real Madrid in the Champions League final, you know, to play Toulouse. But equally, to play them at Twickenham, we knew we had a chance, because if you looked at their playing record, I think they'd been over to England 22 times and they'd only won four occasions. But it was a tough, tough game. I remember knowing, you know, going into that thinking we're up against a very worthy opponent, and if we're going to win this European Cup for the very first time, we're going to have to do it the hard way.
Toulouse had dominated the Heineken Cup, you know, for many years. I think that they'd beaten Perpignan the year before. I think they won the first Heineken Cup against Cardiff.
The confidence of winning the previous games against Perpignan and Munster, there was an element of calmness. I think when you're at home, not only on your home soil, but what we called our second home in Twickenham, you know, there was definitely a confidence in our environment.
Actually, the French did what they did typically, is they got so many good players, they're not quite sure which ones to pick and in which position. But when you look at the Toulouse team, everywhere, they were all internationals right across the park.
The spine of their team, which they had, you know, they were seasoned French international rugby players, ably led by Fabien Palou. The back row, the Macker brothers, one on the bench, one starting. Christian Labitte, who was probably one of the best ball carriers. You know, he didn't want to give any time. And in Servat, as a hooker, an experienced player, been there, done it. They had the platform like we had the platform, and it was certainly, you know, like an English versus French pack.
The former champions against the never-been champions.
Toulouse were a very good defensive team, as you would expect them to be, to get into the final. Secondly, through our inability to keep hold of the ball, whether that was in the contact area or just to put simple execution of passes in place. And we probably hurt ourselves in that first sort of 20-odd minutes.
Clément Poitrineau, where's he off to? Oh, he's up to his old tricks again.
Cedric Hamans was just tearing rings around us. I mean, Joe Worsley was phenomenal, like some of the tackles he was putting. I think there was obviously a few missed opportunities on their point where the offloads weren't going to hand and definitely saved us a few tries. I remember definitely Cedric coming down the middle, and I was kind of trying to come across the cover, and thank God, you know, the ball went down. And yeah, that ability just for them to turn it on so quickly, you just couldn't be off your guard at all in that game.
I mean, the first half, we were chasing shadows. I mean, it was hot. You know, their ability to take the ball into contact and to shift the ball away from contact and to offload the ball just before you got there and made the tackle was incredible, second to none. We were really up against it.
And when sides are playing that offloading mentality against a sort of blitz defence, we just couldn't reset any defensive line. And they kept on playing through us. And just before half-time, you know, they scored a fantastic try.
Midway through the first half, Wasps were 13-6 ahead thanks to Stuart Abbott's try and Mark van Ginsbergen's kicking, but they were still feeling the pressure of the French performance. And just before half-time, Toulouse got it back to within a single score.
Oof! And this is Macker
and Pooks, and it's opening up here, and this is De Leg, and he's got Josion up in support. Wasps shuttling backwards, but it's gone loose, and De Leg has scored.
And I remember running down the tunnel at half-time, you know, we sat down in the changing room, and Sean Edwards sort of sat us all down, and we caught our breath for the first couple of minutes. And he said, right, we are playing a seriously worthy opponent here. And, you know, we need to sort a few things out. And we were very calm, but I think we knew that we were really, really up against one of the best teams in the world.
The second half, and Wasps came out with intent.
Where's this second half going to take us? This is King striding up towards halfway.
My recollections are we came out at half time and we got a scrum round about the 10 metre line in our own half. And we called a set play, which was a move that we'd pulled out once or twice throughout the year. But it was one that we knew specifically that if we could get quick enough ball and hit them back on that switch play, that there would be opportunities.
Well, Van Gisbergen!
He's not the quickest bloke, but it was a bloody long way for him to run with his little legs to get under the post.
Oh, he's through!
I think he was tackled about 5 yards short of the line, but managed to sort of slide over and score under the post, which again, you know, proved to be critical.
When he got that, you thought, oh, we've got the momentum on our side.
But he's got there!
Leading 2011, Wasps were controlling the match until Lawrence Dallaglio was sin-binned and the stage was set for a French comeback.
And I picked up a yellow card from Alan Roland. I probably paid the price for a number of penalties that were given away, but sometimes you make a calculated decision. They brought on LSR and they moved Michelac to 10. And that, all of a sudden, that was probably the team that they should have started with because they started to really come into the game and cause us a lot of problems. And, you know, we knew that they would come back at us. They're a great side.
Losing a man is always difficult against a side like that. It's... You know, you want 15 men on the pitch. You need 15 men on your feet. And, you know, very much a lot of the pre-build up to that was, you know, make a tackle, get on your feet again. So losing Lawrence was a big loss in that respect.
It was about making sure that 10 minutes didn't cost us too many points, didn't cost us the match. We were still very much in the game when I came back out onto the field. It was all to play for, but no one could have envisaged the sort of drama that was about to unfold, really, as the scores were getting closer and closer.
The new kicker, Jean-Baptiste Delisalde. 3 minutes to go, and we're all square in the final.
Three penalties from Jean-Baptiste Delisalde took the score to 20-all, moments left in normal time. And Rob Howley goes on one last career-defining charge. He chipped the ball down the line, more in hope than anything, and chased it down, hoping it would somehow stay in.
But time's as good as up. One last go for Wasps.
I've never seen a ball go as straight as that ball.
I mean, it literally teased and toyed with the touchline without actually going on it.
I sort of bounced, second bounce.
When's he going to pick that up?
I got a chance.
Oh, my goodness!
And then, of course, you've got this drama unfold as Alan Roland's waiting to hear from the TMO.
What on earth has happened?
I think Rob was celebrating before the crowd could celebrate because he could hear it in the referee's ear.
Someone up there is looking down.
This tournament's given us so many spellbinding moments, but nothing, nothing like this.
All the credit has to go to Rob Howley for not just kicking the ball, but actually having the determination to follow it up and see it through. And you couldn't have written a better script. In fact, you couldn't have written that script. It was amazing, really.
The funny thing is, on the Saturday morning, we're at Twickenham, and I'm practising my kicks. And Sean Edwards comes down and he says, just remember, you never kick and hope. Never kick and hope. Then after the game, then when obviously the try is scored and everything, and having a quiet beer, Sean comes up to me and taps me on the shoulder and he says... never listen to me again.
The most dramatic of finals ended 27-20. Wasps went on to win the Premiership title a week later. They beat Bath 10-6 at Twickenham to seal a season of dominance. Tom Voyce, Rob Howley, and of course, Lawrence Dallaglio knew they were at the pinnacle of their club careers as part of one of the defining teams in English rugby history.
There was a large part of me that I was thankful that my father was able to see his son win the Heineken Cup and win it with a fantastic rugby team coached by world-class coaches. I've certainly shared a beer in the West car park after with him. And, you know, I know he had struggled throughout the day because it was a very long day. You know, obviously it was hot as well. And I was just a proud son that my father was able to see, you know, his son win the Heineken Cup with a fantastic rugby team.
For me, it's like, get out to the family. You know, it was the West car park. It was just like, go out there and, you know, meet them and almost thank them for everything they've given you. Because a lot of our emotion, a lot of our season was built up on what family gave you and the opportunity. So it was amazing to see, like, my dad, who dedicated a lot of his time and effort into me being the player I was. But my mum, my sister, we went out for, I think, 3 or 4 days straight. Didn't really see the light of day. And we won that double that year. And you don't see many people win doubles.
Warren's got that incredible ability to create, he's been a winner wherever he's gone. Won before he came to Wasps, and he won after he's come to Wasps. He's won Grand Slams in Wales. I'd like to think that the 3 years that we all had together, where we won 6 trophies in 3 years, were not just successful on the field, but were the best years we've ever had in rugby. He may not be able to admit that openly because he's coached other teams, but I can tell you for a fact that if he's experienced anything better than that, then he's really had a very special life.
There's no way in sport you can replicate those experiences that players have had throughout their time in the London Moss jerseys, and we had a lot of experience in that changing room that had gone through heartache in the international game, heartache in the club game. For whatever reason, we came together, and you need to have characters. It's a unique time for London Wasps that we managed to, you know, in 2 years to win 4 trophies.
And to win the first European Cup in Wasps history against Toulouse at Twickenham in the last minute of the game. Wow.